Hey there, Underground Sessions podcast listeners. We're so glad you're back for our next episode. Today on the podcast, I have Steve DeSebastian, who is the author of the new book, Reintroducing Jesus, Uncovering Jesus in the Misinformation Age. There's lots of misinformation about Jesus out there. We're going to cover things like the Bible, why people have a problem with it, why people have a problem with Jesus, and then also why people have objections to Jesus' message. Is he a God of love? Is he a God of wrath? All different types of things we're going to cover today in the podcast, so stick around and you won't regret it. Look right here, we're good to go. Steve, it is good to be with you today. Can you tell us a little bit about your background? And I imagine some folks that are watching might not be familiar with you. What fields are you working in? Tell us about you.
Well, let's see. You want the whole testimony?
It depends on how long you want this podcast to be. But I'm interested in hearing the story.
Yeah. Well, quick answer. I'll keep it quick. But I wasn't raised in a particularly strong Christian home. My mom brought us to church growing up, but I became a skeptic fairly young. I mean, I was probably in middle school, maybe even a little earlier.
How many middle schoolers describe themselves as being skeptics? I think you were destined for apologetics if you're calling yourself that at 12.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have called myself that, but I was definitely asking the questions that skeptics ask and thinking about. So by the time I was in high school, I definitely wouldn't have called myself a Christian, and definitely in college, I would have called myself a hard agnostic or an atheist.
Okay.
And that lasted till I was 31 years old, until I had a conversion experience, sense of presence of the Holy Spirit. But just because I suddenly believed in God, all those questions didn't magically go away that I had. I started looking into things like apologetics, which, logical reasons for what we believe.
Sure.
I was a teacher. I was a high school English teacher for 16 years during the time I got saved.
Yeah, doing the Lord's work right there.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was definitely a test, that's for sure. And then I started going to seminary. Just because I wanted to learn more. I didn't particularly see myself going into ministry. But then like 7 years ago, my wife and I decided it was time for me to step away from full-time teaching. And essentially, the Lord has given me four part-time jobs. So I have four part-time jobs I do now, three in ministry.
You got a diverse portfolio for your work, huh?
Yeah. I'm like the jack of all trades, master of none. I do Ratio Christi, which you're familiar with, which is a college ministry that focuses on apologetics. That's an international ministry, but I'm at Rutgers University. Then on top of that, I teach part-time the high school seniors at Timothy Christian School, and we do a lot of apologetics and theology and things like that. And then on top of that, I'm a church planter and just planted a micro church.
A micro church.
Yeah.
What is that? Is that like you had a church in a tiny house, or
we're just very short.
Some people might not be familiar with the term.
We're small people. So
right.
We're not very tall.
Well, that works too.
But essentially it's a house church.
Okay.
I mean, we just call it micro church because you don't have to be in a house to have a micro church. I know people, I've heard of people who started them in businesses and things like that. So it's a very small church. So I've been doing that since 2020. And then on top of all that, I also teach martial arts part-time to make extra money. So
hold on a second. I need to be careful what I say here. Yeah. I might regret it. So your interest in apologetics, I think you laid that out pretty well. As you were mentioning that, it made me think, what were some of the objections that you had that began in middle school that continued in high school and beyond? What were those questions you had? Because maybe somebody that's watching today is going to say, that's my objection too. That's my big hang up and why I got a problem with Jesus. What were your main objections?
Well, I mean, to be perfectly honest, I wasn't the most intellectual guy. It wasn't like I was reading all these like scholarly atheists or things like that. But my hang-ups were pretty typical ones. I don't see any evidence of God. If there is a God, how would we even know there's a God? Mm-hmm. So I was very big on that. Well, even if there was a God, there's no way we can know that for sure. And then I had a lot of skepticism just about the Bible in general. So I went to Rowan University down in South Jersey, and I took a Bible class even though I was an atheist. And I found the Bible extremely interesting. I was a literature major, right, an English major. So I found the Bible interesting. I mean, it's part of world history and literature. And it was taught by a skeptic. So he just ripped the Bible apart. So even as an atheist, like, he was giving me ammunition.
Paul didn't write this, and Jesus didn't say that, and all those.
And there's all these contradictions. Mm-hmm. It's been changed over time. This was borrowed from this pagan religion. Mm-hmm. And as an atheist, I was eating it up because it was just giving me ammunition. Yeah. But at the same time, I also realized, as an atheist, I was like, this is very one-sided. Like, and I was like, I remember thinking, no, I don't agree with Christians, but they can't all be stupid. They have to have something to say to this guy. So it's very one-sided. So when I became a Christian, that was really one of the big questions I had, is can I trust the New Testament specifically? Because that's one that tells us about Jesus. So that was one of the first things I really started looking into.
So that's always interesting, and we're going to get into that question later on. So you were really, like, the New Testament was a big hang-up. And was the Old Testament not even – because sometimes people will point to the Old Testament as far as the you know, there was genocide that got committed and how could God create the world in 6 days and things like that. So that wasn't your objection. It was really Jesus. You were honing in on him.
Well, I think my – right. I really honed in on Jesus because my thought when I became a Christian was, well, Jesus is the reason I'm a Christian, right? I call myself a Christian because of Christ. So can I be secure in knowing that what I read in the New Testament is actually what Jesus said? And in a sense, I was like, I'll worry about the Old Testament later. Now,
the New Testament's also shorter, so.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot easier to wrap your head around, honestly. Now, we do, at my college ministry, we do spend a lot of time on the Old Testament. I mean, sure. I just covered the Canaanite genocide, or what people usually call a genocide. Just 2 weeks ago, and then we're tackling slavery in the Old Testament and the New Testament. So we tackle some of those tough topics at my ministry, but I don't get into those things in the book. The book is strictly how do we know about Jesus? How do we know what he said? And can we trust trust the New Testament and what it says about him?
Yeah, sure. Well, that's a good point. So why don't we start talking a little bit about the book? I mentioned it in the introduction, this book, Reintroducing Jesus, Uncovering Jesus in the Misinformation Age. So this hot off the presses right here. I got my copy. Where can you get these, Steve?
Basically Amazon.
So go to Amazon, couple clicks. You too can have this book right here. So tell us a little bit about the book and why you wrote it. You were starting to get into it. What was the impetus? I mean, this is a pretty thick tome you got right here.
Well, just to be fair, it's thick. But if you open it up,
it is true. The big font, right?
Right, big font, and a lot of illustrations and things, and
lots of pictures in the book.
And I purposely wanted it to be very pleasing to the eye when you read it, Well, there's a lot of reasons I read. I mean, for one, I wanted to bring glory to my Lord and Savior, and I believe He's the only hope for this world. So that's obviously the very general one. But more specifically, I wanted to write a book that explored those questions I had when I first came to faith. Like, this is a book I wish someone handed me when I was a new Christian or when I was a open-minded skeptic. And then second really goal I wanted to get through in the book is I wanted to lay this stuff out for someone who wouldn't normally read a book like this. So I like to say it's a apologetics and theology book for people who wouldn't read an apologetics and theology book. And one way I tested that is as I was writing it, I would give it to my mother to read. And she's, she loves Jesus, but she's not the type of person who's going to read an apologetics or theology book. So I was like, does this make sense to you? And I got a lot of good, helpful feedback.
And you got a thumbs up from Mom.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, and there you go.
I mean, that's all you need, right?
For sure.
But essentially, it's answering two big questions, which is why Jesus, So, like, when I first started believing in God, it was, well, why follow Jesus over any of these other spiritual leaders that are out there? And then the second big question is, well, which Jesus? Because there seems to be different versions of Jesus out there. So those are the kind of the two big questions.
Yeah, good. And obviously, misinformation is a big hot button topic nowadays. So you kind of try to catch that wave in the title right there. Hmm. So we talked a little bit about your objections that you are wrestling with. Let me turn around and say that nowadays, I mean, Ratio Christi, you're ministering to college students. You interact with people all over the place that don't know Christ. What are some of the big objections you're hearing from people in the college sphere as it relates to Christianity? And I'll set it up like this. I was watching a video recently, a guy named Doug Wilson, who's controversial in some, depending on if you know anything about him, about some of the views he holds about some things. But he was he was doing a Q&A, and he did a talk on sexuality at a college campus. And I caught this video. It was 2 hours of all these college students coming up and basically just kind of giving it to him with questions. And what struck me was it was a wide range of people, from atheists, people on the LGBT spectrum, people that were progressive Christians, that were asking him all these different every objection you could possibly think of. Most of the objections were in the kind of moral realm.
Right.
Some of the things you brought up before were a little bit more in the intellectual, how can I believe a God exists realm. And of course they're tied together. It was kind of mind-blowing to me about some of the questions that got asked, and even the way Jesus was mocked in the answers to them. So my question, again, for you is, what are some of the big objections you're hearing on the college campus and beyond?
Yeah. Well, the one thing you touched on, which is definitely accurate, is, and I was even reading an article about this on the Gospel Coalition not too long ago, a guy who had been in college ministry for like 10 years, and he said the big difference he's noticing is exactly what you brought up. It's gone from intellectual objections to very moral objections.
Right.
And this is fairly new because usually, you know, many years ago, Christians might have been looked at like, well, you're a little too moral. And, you know, and we don't buy into this, you know, God and Jesus stuff, where now people are actually telling us we're immoral by being Christians. Right. So this is a whole new challenge.
The big thing today.
Right. So so that's one big challenge. The other big challenge is really just apathy. We're finding it very hard to, I mean, the college ministry I'm involved in, Ratio Christi, really was birthed in response to the new atheist movement, which was very big in the early 2000s.
Like the Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins and Hitchens.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those, they're kind of fading away.
Right.
Rutgers doesn't even have an atheist club anymore. When Ratio Christi first came into existence, they actually had an atheist club. And I was just a guest speaker at Ratio Christi at the time, but the students actually befriended the atheist club and would invite them to Ratio Christi, and they would have friendly debates. But the atheist club isn't even around anymore. It seems to be more that people are just apathetic. So trying to get people to want to talk about that stuff. Like, atheists want to talk about that stuff.
Right.
They want to have a friendly debate or a discussion. But the hard part is just getting the students to think about this stuff.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, I remember back in the day, Sam Harris, I thought was a very interesting figure, because he was one of the only ones that was trying to make a moral argument, like how you get morals without God, basically.
Right. Yeah.
And I found his arguments, initially they were intriguing, but now I find them less compelling. And I think he's kind of, like you said, falling a little bit out of prominence in that area. But anyway, yeah. So let me mention something else. So the one thing in terms of the apathy thing, so you have people that are coming that aren't Christians at all, but then you also have people that maybe grew up in the church and then have left the church and have started, the popular term now is deconstructing. Everybody's deconstructing their faith, or deconstruct and then reconstructing something that may or may not make sense.
Right.
So you open your book with this illustration on the topic of deconstruction, and I'm wondering if you could maybe define what that is and why, from your mind, is it popular today, and what does apologetics have to say to the deconstructing person?
Yeah, like you said, it's a big thing right now, especially with younger people. And honestly, I've come across quite a few people in our age group that sure. have been going through that too. And the people I've come across tend to be people who grew up in, in church, and they're just kind of re-examining everything. Really, when you get down to it, there's just like anything, there's the good, the bad, and the ugly. So, I mean, as an apologist and a former skeptic, I'm all for people taking time to examine what they believe and really think deeply about that. I mean, we're called to love God with all our mind, right? So we want to be using our mind and not just blindly following things. So I would say the good thing from this movement, or basically this kind of trend, is people are re-examining things, and it's good when they get rid of something that might be more cultural than it is biblical, right? So some people, I think, if they're re-examining, will realize, like, okay, this is a tradition that's been handed down to me through the church, but I don't find it in the Bible, so I can disregard it. I would say the bad is what you brought up, which is when you have someone who just is very inconsistent. They discard what they find problematic, or they find they don't like, mm-hmm. and then hold on to the rest, and they end up with something that's really not Christianity anymore, even though they're calling it Christianity.
Right.
And then to an even further extent is some people just abandon Christianity altogether.
Yep.
Now, as a former skeptic myself, I can say, you know, with all honesty, and this is my opinion, but in all honesty, I don't think those who end up leaving the faith or end up with a Christianity that isn't what we've historically believed anymore are thinking long enough. Like, I think they're looking, some of them, not all of them, but some of them, I think, are just looking for an excuse to leave, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. Do you think that a lot of people, when they get into this deconstructing mindset, there's usually some kind of trigger that gets them there? So whether it's, I had a different thought about sexuality and LGBT issues, or I had a friend who was then hurt or ostracized, or I went through a painful divorce, or somebody got sick. Like, there's usually a triggering event that causes them to think, well, maybe I should rethink whether God is real, or whether the church is really living out the mission that Jesus gave them. Do you find that, or am I a little off?
Yes.
Like, nobody wakes up, nobody wakes up one day and says, you know what, I think I'll start deconstructing today. There's usually right. something that pushes them over the edge to get right. them there.
Right. So there's usually, and let's be honest, a lot of people, and I find this when I just have conversations with skeptics, a lot of people have hide behind intellectual reasons, mm-hmm, but usually mm-hmm. there's an emotional or volitional right. reason. Volitional meaning, like, they don't want to obey God, basically. Usually there's something that triggers that. I found in some of the churches I've been involved with, the way women have been treated in some churches mm-hmm, have been mm-hmm. a big trigger, and some is wrong and needs to be addressed. So there's definitely these situations, and again, sexuality is a big one. That sort of triggers these things and gets them going.
Good. So what do you think is some of the, in your title, Jesus in the Misinformation Age, what do you think are some of the biggest misinformation about Jesus that's out there on the average, let's just say the average person on the college campus that has no really background with Christianity? What's some of the misinformation or the disinformation that they're getting about him from other sources?
Well, specifically about Jesus, I would say those, and this kind of goes back to the deconstructing and some of the people, they essentially make Jesus into their own image, right? So some portray Jesus as the social justice warrior, others portray just your best friend who just wants to kind of sit there and cry with you and give you a hug.
Jesus is my homeboy.
Yes. Yep. Yep. I remember those shirts well. Jesus is my homeboy. You know, and that's another, you know, view of Jesus. He's like, he make a good drinking buddy, you know.
I'd have a beer with Jesus, right? Some people think that.
Right. So that's one. Or you have the other extreme where Jesus is like, you know, only like the Jesus you see in the book of Revelation, who's ready to just come down and start, you know, taking out all the sinners, you know.
Right. And it's got tattoos up and down his arms, right?
Right, right. Yeah. So the MMA Jesus is what I call it.
Well, there you go. You guys can practice martial arts.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't think I'd win, but.
Yeah, probably not. Your hip socket would come out like Jacob. Right. All right, so why don't we walk through a little bit of the book in the next couple questions. So in part one of the book, you seem to focus on objections people raise about the Bible itself. And then you have different sections that focus on like manuscript transmission and the canon and the first century application and the contradictions. I forget if we were talking about that on when we were recording or before, but why do you think the Bible is so attacked? Like that's kind of like the Bible is in crosshairs, even within the church among some popular preachers. Like I understand, I'm trying to reach you and I understand why you would have problems with the Bible. Mm-hmm. Why is the Bible attacked so much?
Well, I think, the obvious answer is traditionally and historically, as Christians, we believe it's the word of God. Mm-hmm. And we base our whole faith on the witness of the Bible. So if someone doesn't like a stance that Christians take or a view Christians take, well, they're going to attack the source of that, mm-hmm. which would be the Bible. Now, like we talked about earlier, the book doesn't get into the Old Testament at all. We just focus on the New Testament.
Right.
But what's interesting is, and again, this was a big question I had, especially after taking that Bible class when I was a college student, is, well, can I trust the New Testament?
Mm-hmm.
How do
mm-hmm.
I know it hasn't been changed over time? And something I hear so often, and I've heard it from all different walks of life, is someone would just very nonchalantly say to me, well, you know, the Bible's been changed like the telephone game, right?
Yes.
And you know what the telephone game is?
That's the Bart Ehrman thing, right?
Right.
Yeah, and popularized that.
Right. And Bart Ehrman's used very much on the college level still.
I'm sure.
We hear that a lot.
So how would you answer that objection? Let's use that as an mm-hmm. example.
Well, usually I point out, and this is what I teach my students to do, is one, to point out that we have more manuscript evidence of ancient New Testament writings than any other ancient manuscript or ancient writing by far. We literally have thousands more than any other copy. And they go back fairly early to, some all the way back to the second century. So we have so much evidence that essentially we can look at them and compare them. And what I like to do is point out the inconsistency between the telephone game and how the New Testament was passed on. So, for example, the telephone game is actually set up for failure.
Mm.
So there's only one line of transmission, right? The New Testament was more like a family tree. We had it went viral in the ancient sense.
Right.
Like people were just copying it and passing it on and on and on. So you have different branches giving birth to new branches and on and on. So right there, it's extremely different than the telephone game, mm-hmm. right? Because we have one line versus many lines of transmission. Second, the telephone game is verbal and it's whispered, and it's purposely whispered so nobody else can witness to what was said,
right.
Where the New Testament is obviously written.
And was read out loud.
Right, exactly. And then obviously the final one is...
It's like everybody was on speakerphone when they were listening to the New Testament.
Right. And then they actually had written documents
right.
they could go back
right.
and check where the...
It was a large Zoom call that was transcribed by an AI device.
Right, exactly. And then basically you have... the telephone game doesn't let you repeat, where the New Testament, you could go
right.
back and check it and repeat and so on. So we're able to go back, compare all the ancient manuscripts. We have more access to those ancient manuscripts due to modern technology than ever before. So in a sense, we're actually more confident today than we were even 100 years ago that the New Testament we read today is what the apostles wrote. Now, is there variations in some of the early manuscripts? Yes, but the vast majority are simple spelling and writing errors. And because we
right.
have so many manuscripts, we can compare them and see where these errors have been made and correct them, basically.
Yeah. Good. All right, so that's part one. Part one is focusing on the Bible, so let's not tell them everything. Make sure you go pick up the book and read it. Part two focuses on the person and work of Jesus. Now, if I asked you in the first question, why is the Bible so attacked, I think Jesus is often attacked today. Mm-hmm. And why would you say that is? We talked a little bit about misinformation about him, but people that have a vitriolic objection to him, why is that?
Well, again, I think this is the source of the Christian faith, obviously. And if you're in opposition to the Christian faith, you're going to attack the one that we follow.
Okay. Well, let me put this. So that's one of the attack thing. But let's say that you had some folks may have had a interaction like this in their lifetime. Let's say you had a Mormon or a Jehovah's Witness mm-hmm. knock on your door, and they said, "Well, I believe in Jesus too."
Right.
How have you handled Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses who claim to follow Christ?
Well, I mean, the big thing is, well, who is Jesus? And well, let me just share a story. I mean, we used to have Jehovah's Witnesses come to the door all the time. They haven't been back since the pandemic, but they came over once.
Jehovah's Witnesses, they're still scared of COVID.
I don't know. I haven't seen them. But they came, either they put an X on my door and know not to come there anymore, but they would come on Saturdays a lot, and I would give them some friendly pushback, and I would say, "You mind if I get my Bible?" And I'd kind of shown passages that clearly speak of Jesus being God, and say, "Well, what do you make of this?" So they left, you know, the one day, and I turned to my wife and I said, "They're either never going to come back, or they're going to come back next week with the elder," which is what they usually do.
Right.
So the
right.
following week, they came back with the elder, and me and him met up for coffee like three different times and had really good conversations. A super nice guy. But I would always just bring the conversation right back to, well, who is Jesus? Is Jesus divine? Because Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, reject that. They reject the Trinity. They reject the deity of the Holy Spirit. So he would always try to bring the conversation in other directions, but I would always be like, but let's talk about Jesus.
Right, right.
But, you know.
Yeah, I've had those experiences too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Well, good. Well, that's good. You know, one of my favorite stories I've ever heard about the Jehovah's Witnessing example was, have you seen that video with Francis Chan talking about Jehovah's Witnesses?
No.
Well, he comes up and he does kind of the same thing you did, and then they got frustrated with him and they started walking away, and he said, "I started following them down the road and they didn't want to talk with me anymore." Because now I was giving them a taste of their own medicine. All right. Well, the end of part two, you started to talk a little bit about worldview, which I think is an important part of this discussion as well. How would you define worldview, and what is that? Where does worldview play into apologetics? Are they the same? Are they different? Do they go hand in hand? How do you define that?
Well, worldview is essentially a person's personal philosophy of the world, and it answers certain key questions, and those key questions really influence how you live your life and other things. So a big one is obviously, where did we come from? So there's a big difference if you believe we're made in the image of God, or if you believe in macroevolution and that we evolved from lesser, simpler life forms. So that where did we come from? And then the second big question is, where are we going?
Mm.
And another big question is, what's wrong with the world? Because
right.
it doesn't matter what worldview you have. We all know there's something wrong with the world. So how you answer those questions usually leads to you having a answer in another important question, which is, how do we solve the problem?
Right.
And a lot of that then also dictates our morals, right? So whether you're an atheist or you're a Christian or some other religion, we all have worldviews whether we believe it or not.
Yeah, I would tend to think that there's people all agree there's some big questions that we're all answering, whether we know it or not. And people have different lists of what those questions are. Some say there's five big questions. You mentioned a couple. And they overlap to some extent. But the helpful thing I've often thought with that is that it gives you a sense of where people are and how they're coming to their conclusions based on how they're answering those questions, which then gives you the lay of the land so that you know how to respond and what topics to bring up.
Definitely,
which is, you know, I think kind of the realm then of apologetics.
Right. Now, what's if you don't mind. But
yeah.
What's hard nowadays is, again, what I was saying earlier, it's almost easier to talk with an atheist because mm-hmm. they're pretty mm-hmm. clear on what they believe. A lot of people nowadays, I'm finding in, you know, in our cultural context,
yep.
is they're not even really sure what they believe. So they fall into this, like, blurry, spiritual, not religious category.
Yeah.
So they're not hardened yeah. atheists, but they're not subscribing to any religion either. And that's a lot harder to address and talk to about.
Yeah.
But what's interesting, and this is what I bring up in the book in that section you're alluding to, is a lot of them, it seems like as soon as you start giving them evidence for who Jesus is or talking about Jesus, they suddenly start thinking like atheists. Like, even though they seem yeah. very open to spiritual things, you're like, well, have you ever considered that maybe God is real and God walked
yeah.
the earth?
Yeah.
Suddenly they start thinking like naturalistic, materialistic atheists
mm-hmm.
and start giving me all these answers. And I'm like, but as far as I know, from what you've told me, you're not an atheist. So why are you immediately writing this off
yeah.
as if you are an atheist, right?
Yeah. Well, can I give you a theory about that? You
yeah,
tell,
yeah.
tell me if I'm wrong.
So oh, definitely.
I think there's a number of people who you can go through and you and they can I have all these they can say I have all these questions about I don't believe right. in God and this and that, but a lot of people are engaging in this kind of syncretistic, like I'm piecing together all these different mm-hmm. worldviews in a way that it makes most sense for me, and in a way that I can live my life however I want to live,
right.
right? So that I can essentially be the king of my own universe.
Yes.
So they'll keep bringing up those questions, but the core of it, which I think gets into your third part of the book, is that they're bringing up these extra objections because they ultimately don't want to submit their lives to Jesus.
Yes.
You know, so at the end of the day, I don't want to hear about a God who's telling me how to live, who's imposing his morals on me, who's telling me that I can't, you know, I'm not number one, right?
Right, right.
So I don't know if you find that to be true, but I found that to be true. So then there's just endless questions, but really what they're doing is they're resisting resisting coming to Christ because
yeah.
they don't want him to be the king of their life.
Yeah. And I you know, almost everything I'm saying is not original. I've, you know, gotten from
right.
somewhere else. But there's a well-known apologist that speaks about when he speaks at colleges a lot, and he says,
yep.
you'd be surprised the amount of times that he's sitting there getting peppered by an atheist. And, you know, he answered their question, they'll throw another one. And then finally he stops them and says, listen, answer a question for me. If I answer all your questions of satisfaction, will you become a Christian? And he says, you'd be surprised about how many people say no, which shows it's not just an intellectual thing
right.
that's going on, right? So usually, and again, I didn't come up with this, but when I teach my high schoolers and my college students, I teach them there's three major reasons people reject Christ. There's intellectual, there's emotional, and then there's volitional, which mm-hmm. is what you're talking about. Like
yeah.
they don't
there's a Gary Habermas book about that.
Right. Yeah.
yeah. I don't know if that's where you got it from, but I remember
yeah.
hearing that same categories. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's well known in the apologetic circle,
yeah.
so it,
yeah.
it could very well have been Habermas. Yeah. But, and so I tell my students, like, any evangelism has to at least be threefold. Like, as an apologist, people think, I think apologetics is the answer to everything. It's not. It's good for answering intellectual objections and getting them out of the way. But then you have to show people Christ's love, which is addressing usually the emotional. And then you have to be in prayer because only the Holy Spirit really can change hearts.
Right.
So as an apologist, I don't think apologetics answer everything. We have to have a good, well-rounded biblical view of how to reach people and why
sure.
why they're rejecting Jesus.
Good. Well, so my question about part three of your book is in terms of focusing on Jesus' mission. I think a lot of times I see people wanting to invoke Jesus and what Jesus said when they have a problem with Christians, especially in the media, you mm-hmm. know. So have you seen examples of Jesus being misquoted for the purpose of people making a point? And like the things that you mentioned underneath this section were, you know, religion, you know, people making a commentary on that. Politics is another one. Jesus mm-hmm. gets invoked to make a point. And then you start to see this bifurcation of, is God a God of love? And
right.
then you bring up the whole point about, well, no, yes, he is, but how do we define love? And also God is talked about as being a God of wrath in the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I asked you a couple different, let's start with, where do you find Jesus to be misquoted today? Are people using him to make their points?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And I'm sure you, honestly, Bob, you probably can think of more examples. I can. But I mean, obviously, we see it in politics. People want to use Jesus for their political, ends. And I mean, essentially, it's nothing new, but you're just seeing people cherry pick, right? They're just picking something out of context or trying to pick something Jesus said without taking the whole Bible into account. So actually, to give you, a story, a very good example, we were out in Utah with Rosh Christie.
Okay, some Mormons.
Yep.
Got the Mormons out there.
Doing Mormons outreach. We went to Brigham Young University, mm-hmm. Biggest Mormon university there is. And we didn't plan this. We just walked onto the campus, and we see a protest going on. So we ask around, and we find out that this is a protest because just a few days before, the university slackened their rules about same-sex dating on campus. And then they kind of revoked them again. So these were students, Mormon students, at the university protesting that same-sex dating wasn't allowed on campus. So, the sexual revolution came to, it's coming to the Mormons as well, or going on with Mormons as well. And there was a young lady standing there with a sign that just said, "Jesus loves everyone, ask me anything." So I'm like, well, great. She invited me to. So I went over and talked to her for a while. But here you have, again, just think of the context. We have Mormon students arguing for same-sex, dating on campus, using Jesus to try to back that up. So obviously Mormons have a very different view of Jesus than we do. And I think as conservative Christians or Bible-believing Christians, we would we would agree that, Jesus would not, approve of same-sex dating.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a common question now, I think today, right?
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I asked her a few questions. We had a nice interaction, but I just, asked her basically what she made of Matthew 19, where Jesus lays out marriage. God made them man and woman, and the two become one flesh. So it was an interesting conversation, especially as a Mormon, because she...
And what was her takeaway from that?
Well, she didn't have much to say, to be honest. I mean, and it was a friendly interaction.
Yeah,
I wasn't being a jerk. I don't think that gets anywhere, but...
Hopefully it got her thinking. Maybe she'll go back and read it and rethink,
Try to plant some seeds. But actually the question I asked her, as Mormons, they believe you have to be married. That's part of their theology to babies.
Yes, and then to perpetuate spirit children to eventually get your own collab, right?
Exactly. Thanks.
They don't usually bring that up, but yes.
So I asked her that. I said, well, how could two men or two women produce spirit children?
Right.
And her answer was pretty crazy. I don't even know if you want me to rehash it, but it was pretty out there.
Yeah. Well, we'll just leave it there.
Yeah.
So maybe as we kind of come to the end here, I did want to ask you, if people were picking up your book, again, Reintroducing Jesus, if they're going and picking it up on Amazon, what would you say is the biggest takeaway you want people to take from this book if they read it?
I think the biggest takeaway that I really want someone to get is that this really happened. I think even sometimes as Christians, it's so like 2,000 years in the past, and it's hard to imagine, right? It's still very much, there's a big separation between what happened in the New Testament and us today. But, when you read these historical arguments and start thinking about it, you realize something very unusual must have happened. I mean, we have Jesus, who's a rabbi from the backwaters of the Roman Empire, from everything we can tell, grew up extremely impoverished, right? And he literally becomes the most influential person in the history of the world, right? There's more songs about him. There's more books written about him. There's more paintings of him. So there had to be something unique about this man. And then when you start looking at more of the other details and seeing that, well, there's other people who claimed to be the Messiah, and they were killed by the Romans. And what happened? All their followers disappeared. Yet Jesus, he gets crucified, and suddenly his followers are spreading everywhere, claiming he rose from the dead.
Right.
So whether you're a skeptic or a Christian, you have to, you know, let me rephrase that. Even as a skeptic, you have to admit there had to be something very unusual about this man. Something extremely unusual happened in history, because here there's no reason why this man should be the most well-known man in the history of the world. Yet here we are 2,000 years later, you know, talking about him still.
Right. Yeah. Cool. So what do you think are some of the biggest lessons people need to learn about apologetics in today's world? Kind of giving you a lightning round here, and then I got one more for you.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I would say, again, someone who's passionate about apologetics and who's really was into it, as I've grown into a more mature Christian, I've realized what I was saying earlier, which is apologetics isn't the end-all and be-all. Like, I used to think, well, if you just gave a logical enough argument, you're going to bring people to Christ. And you have to realize you have to hit people in the head and the heart, and that we're holistic beings of emotion and logic and all that. Yeah. So, you know, we need to speak truth in love. That's extremely important, that if we're not modeling. Who said the best apologetic is how we live? So I forget who said that.
I've heard that, but I'm not sure what the original source was.
Yeah, but extremely important. So, again, we have to show the love of Christ as well as love God with our minds and our whole souls.
So a wedding together of story, narrative, and evidence-based facts would be a good.
Okay. I think so. Yeah.
All right. And then thirdly, just maybe a big question. How do we reach the next generation of young people? And maybe that ties in with the question I just asked you, but you're working with them. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the most important thing to do there?
Yeah. You know,
other than they should read your book. Right.
Right. Yeah. Just read the book. That'll solve everything. I mean, again, the two biggest challenges is I find apathy and distraction, which are both very closely linked.
Right. In the sense that when you're distracted all the time, you become apathetic, right?
Right, right. And it's hard.
Or you can become apathetic.
Oh, definitely. And we live in New Jersey, so you know how busy everybody is. Mm-hmm. Everybody's just busy. So overcoming those two obstacles is definitely a big challenge. Now, if I had the easy answer to that, I'd have a best-selling book probably that everybody, you know, every pastor.
Don't sell yourself short right here. I mean, we just came out, right?
Right, right. It's on it's on the way, right?
New York Times is about to call Amazon.
That's right. That's right. It's coming soon. But yeah, dealing with the apathy and the distraction, and in a sense, things don't really change. I mean, some of the, even though we were talking earlier about how a lot of the objections have become more moral and emotional, those old intellectual ones still come up. Like, we still have to cover those things. How do we trust the Bible? Right. Did Jesus really rise from the dead? How do we know God exists? We still have to cover those. So in some ways, nothing has changed. We still have to do the work that Jesus has told us to do. Just things might look a little different. So, I mean, what you guys are doing here with your podcast and you know, more and more ministries having online ministries and things like that. Now, again, I don't think that answers everything, but this new generation, you definitely have to have an online presence to catch their attention.
Right.
And then the trick is getting them from being engaged online to actually be part of a Christian community where they actually have real relationships with people and see people face to face. That's, I think, essential.
Good. Well, Steve, thank you so much for sharing. Again, the book is Reintroducing Jesus, Uncovering Jesus in the Misinformation Age. You don't want to miss this. For an expanded explanation on everything we talked about on the podcast today, check it out on Amazon. Don't be afraid to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're so glad you popped in for the Underground Sessions podcast. Steve, glad that you were here today.
Yeah, thanks
We're
going
to have to have you back for another topic. Maybe one of the ones that we talked about today we'll dive further into.
Oh, anytime. Right. It'll be fun.
Awesome. All right. Thanks so much. We hope to see you next time.